Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
This is Superlative, a podcast about watches, the people behind them, and the worlds that inspire them. Spending time with the Blog to Watch community and the stories we discover. Let's get started.
Hey everyone, Ariel Adams here with the Superlative Podcast. Today my guest is Miss Rosette Hirsch. Rosette worked for a long time at Plaza Watch, is responsible for some of my favorite watch photography, especially sort of in a magazine sense. And we've had adventures together, and we've talked about watches together, and we've laughed together. And I'm really happy to welcome you to Superlative. Hey Rosette.
Hi Ari, how are you?
I'm good. I just realized that our entire show is supposed to be about something visual and we're talking about it, which means we have to be very descriptive.
Yes, that's for sure. Let's do this.
I remember walking the halls of SIHH for a number of years and admiring this photography that was sort of in this hallway area. And I believe you were responsible for some of that photography. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, we had to convince them for, I think, like over 6 years that we should do something. I mean, the hallway was so long. I mean, there had to be like a exhibition. So Plaza Watch was one of the best watch.
Let me put some context here. So SIHH was a major trade show that went on for a number of years. It just ended and is going to be transformed into a show called Watches and Wonders, which in essence is the same thing, but it's a different name. And as visitors would enter and exit the PAL Expo, which is a convention center at basically the Geneva Airport in Switzerland, you'd go through this hallway, and it was very decorated in there. It was a big setup, like a little mini city. And in this hallway was these large prints of, you know, think of it as fashion photography, but the subject is a watch.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
That's really what it is. It was meant to take these watches and make them look as beautiful and as interesting as possible in a highly sort of thought-provoking and emotional sense. Very, very, like, highly produced. And there was, you know, I don't know, maybe a dozen of these images as you walk through. And thousands of people, that would be the first thing and the last thing that they thought about as they went in and out of this, you know, luxury watch trade show. And I always thought that must have been so great. Your name wasn't there, but do you ever think about all the people that you reached?
Yeah, I mean, people were emailing us and they wanted to buy the pictures, and some of them were, you know, they had their favorite watch exposed at the SIHH. I mean, they loved the pictures, but we were never selling the images. It was just
why?
Because we didn't feel
you hate money.
We hate money. No.
Yeah.
we didn't want to make a profit out of it. It was we just loved what we do, and I mean, we are a magazine. We were there to promote like the latest collection from the SIHH. I think we were so into producing the images that we never thought of selling them. I mean, we every year we just left them to the SIHH crew, and everyone was like taking them and putting up in their office. So
it's an interesting thing. You know, it's kind of a good story as to how doing good work and having something impactful doesn't even translate into sort of success. Like, it was successful in the sense that you reached all these people and you made great work, but you know, it was just sort of a convoluted thing where in this industry no one's really quite always sure to like how to make business out of something beautiful. And it seems like luxury, the success people find is finding that very difficult way of making money while also making something beautiful, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, I can explain, like, if we did, when we were planning to make a picture or we had an idea, I mean, it would take us, you know, up to 1 month to produce one picture. It was a setup of 25 people. We were always, you know, casting the right people to be the model and the image. You know, there was so much.
It was a production. It was a real production.
I mean, when we had like a beach idea, we even transported sand into the studio. I think like 1 ton of sand to the studio. So it was like nothing is like a Photoshop production. Everything is a big production. And that's, I think, what the watch industry loved about us. It was something new. They'd never seen it before.
They loved it, but also it sounds like they weren't willing to fund it. You know, you did work that was so good for people that may have not appreciated it. Now, help me understand what happened, because it was so loved, but nobody, like, why was it? Was it about the money? Was it about the relationships? Because these brands, they're so cheap. I'm sorry to say, but they're so cheap. They want wonderful things for free.
I think they became cheap. I mean, the first 20 years we were one of the successful magazines, but you know, when social media came, it became like fast food. I remember once I was having an interview with a watch CEO, and he told me, like, look at this picture this Instagram social media guy took of our watch. It was a, you know, basic iPhone picture, and look, it got like 100,000 likes. And I was like, here
your
I am.
Your heart sank. Your heart sank.
Yeah. You know, and I just showed them an amazing watch photography of their watch on the cover, and they didn't.
And it's gorgeous. I don't want to sort of like underemphasize how nice a great watch picture can be. This industry has had these amazingly high production value photography campaigns that you, Rosette, have made and a few others. And they're so awesome. But then, like you said, they're so focused on engagement. It's kind of like this is the industry to make beautiful things, but it's run by people that only want to sell things no matter how ugly it is.
I know. But I think that's coming back. I mean, I think they were confused, but it was just interesting to see how social media became, you know, in the watch industry, everybody became like hobby photographers, and I was
the first wave. I mean, I unintentionally, you know, kind of disrupted the professional watch photographer, because I came in and I took pictures for myself. I wasn't giving it to brands, but that I published and did, you know, have sort of a very direct correlation to selling watches and things like that. Yeah. But I never, and I want to say this in defense of you and the other professionals like you, I never tried to sell photography to brands, tried to say that it was a service for them, ever actually call myself a photographer. I always wanted to give credit to real photographers doing great work because I appreciated it, but I could not control the fact that the brands simply were looking for every opportunity to spend as little as possible over the last several years. It's sort of like there's nothing you or I could have done about that.
No, that's true. And it was confusing as well. I mean, some brands really understood, and we had like loyal brands throughout the years, because the ones that actually produced their own materials, and they understood how complicated and how much it cost to produce one image. And some of them actually bought them to use them in their channels for marketing. So, I mean, I'm not saying everyone became fast food junkies of Instagram pictures, but I mean, it was a confusing period of time. I mean,
we're in a dark ages of media, right? Because media is basically an infinite commodity. And because it's infinite, nobody has that much incentive to put a lot of production value into it, right? Like, there was a time where there was a certain amount of, like, movie screens, right? You knew it was going to have a theatrical release. It was a captive audience. You could put a bunch of money into a movie because you had this great understanding of how you're going to make that money back. Yeah. These days, it's like, wait a minute. I had more people seeing it than in the theaters, but I'm making less money. Yeah. So it's this sort of weird situation where you know, I don't know if it's the opposite of inflation or something like that, but all this information has this presumption of both being free and also, you know, disposable and replaceable. And no one could keep up and no one could afford it. Like, imagine if you had to put in the effort behind one of your, you know, photography campaigns every single day for new stuff on Instagram. Like, it would bankrupt everyone, right?
Yeah, I know. It would.
So it's like, I don't know what the solution is, but we know that we're going through this unsustainable period. And like any storm, it's got to end at some point.
For sure. But I think like it's all about knowledge, to be honest, like on knowledge, interest and passion, not like scrolling around, like just, you know, I don't know how to explain this, but
well, look, here's what we're basically trying to say. We're trying to advocate for the fact that professional watch photography is this beautiful thing that captivates people's hearts and gets them excited about watches in a way that amateur photography cannot. And what we're fighting against is a couple of things. One, there's this massive availability of photographers out there with iPhones willing to do it for free. Yeah. Remember, it used to be that you needed pictures made, you had to call a photographer, and a photographer was going to try to romance you on cool stuff. Yeah. Now it's like brands tell me this. They're like, people send us pictures all day long. They say, hey, will you please just put me in your Instagram account and tag me? Mm-hmm. I'm a photographer. Let me do a bunch of stuff for you. Just send me a watch. I'll do it for free, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Brands are inundated with offers for free or highly, you know, discount style media that they're just like, wait a minute, we can make our dollars go a little bit further here. So it's sort of this weird thing where it's not really an argument of is the photography beautiful or not. It's do we need it to sell watches?
I mean, I can explain to you. I mean, we did a collaboration with a brand once and they had a problem to communicate out what they were doing. I mean, they didn't actually have like a DNA or a code for what the brand was.
This could be any brand.
Yes, I know. They all looked similar. So we said, okay, let's produce imagery that, you know, sets the collection and building up the brand. And we did it together with them because, you know, the classic sentence for a picture tells you more than 1,000 words. Right. I mean, this is how we worked with the brand for 2 years, building up their image from watch photography. And I mean, they were advertising.
No, this is agency style work. You're not just a photographer. You're it's building a story. You're communicating it. I mean, look. And again, I used to talk about this so much, I almost willed myself to stop because I felt like a broken record, but I had been screaming into the wind for nearly 15 years now that the watch industry doesn't invest nearly as much money as it should into the sort of larger umbrella of marketing, which this is part of it. And you've had it with other people. I've had it with other people. All these conversations that literally revolve around, wow, the watch industry would sell more or do better if they just did this marketing thing. It's like the most common conversation in this industry. Do you agree?
Absolutely, I agree. But you also need to have like a strategy, a red thread through the entire collection and the communication. And I think with photography, then that's how you do it. I mean, you keep the red thread through the entire collection and how you communicate it. Not like working with different influencers. I don't know.
Oh, influencers. That's their favorite poison right now. The opinion mercenaries.
Image, I don't know.
You know, even the influencers don't seem to respect themselves anymore. Like, I see these people at events now, especially since events are coming back. And I know you and I have laughed about them for a long time. But like, they're almost like caricatures of themselves.
Yeah.
You know, they're so open about the fact they just take money for stuff. They're like, I can't, you know, they're almost surprised by it. They're hyper obsessed with their image. They're very strange creatures. They're not all bad people, but they're very strange creatures, and they're not particularly great for society, and they know it. Like, you ask an influencer, is what you're doing good for society? They'll be like, no. Like, none of them think that this is at all helping anything. They recognize that no one needs what they're doing, and they're just like, well, I'm doing it because I can, and there's money, and what other opportunities do I have? And it's true. No one's offering these people like marketing jobs. No one's saying like, oh, you should be an actor or an actress, or you should lead this company. Like, that's the weird thing. Like, we have all these people who get internet famous, but then there's no one to hire them. So then what happens? You I hate to use the term, you then have to whore yourself out, right?
Yeah.
You got bills to pay. You spent all this time getting famous. You got an expensive lifestyle. You can't make money the legitimate way. Well, you whore yourself out. And isn't that what an influencer is?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it is. But, you know, I'm going to sound old now, but do you remember back in the days when it was just...
Yeah, when you say remember back in the days, yeah, you're going to say, guarantee.
It's like, yeah, but I mean, do you remember when it was only watch journalists at the fairs and at the events? I mean...
Why does that make you sound old? I don't understand.
I mean, it was like...
it was so long ago?
Yeah, because you can't...
Back before my knees were creaky.
I mean... You know? You know, some watch journalists, you know, quit their job and became, you know, started working with something else. And because the influencers are being, you know, invited to stuff and they can't
those
even
pronounce.
Those
people never did anything to begin with. Those yeah. people wrote some of those people, and you're right, there's some great people that left, but a lot of the people, they wrote the most useless nonsense. It was just like words. It's like my skill is writing words.
But at least they were writing something. I mean,
no one was reading it. They were being paid good money to do very little.
No,
I remember. No, I'm going to tell you something. I remember it was a dinner at Baselworld years ago. I was having a conversation with someone who was at a magazine, and I don't remember how it came up, but they mentioned the amount of words that they needed to write per quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a calculation in my head. I'm like, okay, so you're paid a salary, you travel around, and basically the only output you need to do, because you're a watch writer, is to write this many words per quarter. And I wrote that many words in less than a week. Okay?
Yeah.
And I was like, so I could do I was like doing the math. I was like, wow, I could take over like 10 of you guys, okay? And you know, and make a handsome living. And then I realized, uh-oh, unfortunately you guys are about to go out because the industry is going to determine that you're overpaid. I'm not saying they were, but their jobs at that point was too easy because no one was relying on it. Those people were not writing for large communities. They were writing to satisfy advertisers' whims. It's not, you know, there were the people that wrote for the big magazines, but there's very little
of
that.
I see what you mean. I know, but not all of them was like that. I mean, there will always be the good ones and bad ones. But what I mean is that it was 100% watch journalists. Now it's like 50% journalists, 50% influencers. Influencers that can't even pronounce the name of the brand sometimes. Or well, they look, just take pictures of themselves
explain why.
And not the watch. That's the difference.
The influencers filled the positions that were no longer able to be filled by watch journalists. As the watch journalists went out, no one was there to replace them. So it's like influencers were like the next best thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I can't sit during a presentation and they are just taking picture of themselves while this designer is, you know,
eager to
talk about the watch that they've been working on for
Here's
so
why
many
I love
years.
It. And Here's I, why
like,
I love
so
it.
It's so disturbing. I hate it.
I know. Yeah. But look, it's sort of like, you remember in school and there were those kids that were clearly not paying attention. And you remember thinking to yourself, like, your lives are going to suck because, yeah, you feel like you're awesome right now, but you're not actually learning, which means you actually aren't going to gain skills or do anything. These people are going to find some type of, you know, roadblock where they can't be influencers anymore. And they're like, hey, what else am I good at? It's like, oh, shit, nothing.
That's hard.
No, seriously. They know that. Like, okay, they're good at spending other people's money to wear the most fashionable thing in the moment and say that thing that is the most socially acceptable right now. You know what I mean? Like they're literally honed in on exactly what society wants people to say. There are some jobs for them, but they're just like weird professional liars and chameleons. Like they're not they're not really people anymore.
No.
Like they know this. They have these identity crises. You know, you take some of them, you peel off all the makeup and the fancy clothes, and like there's just a perfectly ordinary, boring person with very few personal opinions. It's true. That's all that's left after just peeling back a couple of layers. You know, They created, all I'm saying is I'm not threatened by these people in the long run because they have very limited lifespans and they don't actually do society a lot of good. They're there because advertisers really want to pay them. No consumers ever want to take them seriously once they learn that their entire job is just to be an opinion mercenary. Mm-hmm. The ones that are successful have some other shit going for them, but they're actually, you know, they're only popular for a limited amount of time. The internet has like not that long of an appetite for most people.
You know why I love a blog to watch? I mean, before I met you, I was always, you know, going in because it was like an honest review of a watch. It wasn't like, this is the watch, this is how it looks like. It was like, it was so honest. It was, this is the function and this is what it does. This is our take on it. And I think it was, it felt like a friend talking, explaining a watch to me, and it was great. I mean, it was educational. That's rare in the industry. It's now you can just see a watch being posted with the name and reference. It's like so pointless. It's like,
You know, the thing is this, the internet is ruled by whatever catches the most attention, not what's the highest quality. I went to law school. And when I started writing for a public, I was like, wait a minute, someone's going to judge me based upon what I say to them. I better not lie to them or mislead them or be foolish. So I'm going to tell them what I think and explain myself because that's the right thing to do. But then I realized years later, not everyone went to law school.
No.
And so we have a lot of people that are writing for an agenda, are doing what they think works by, you know, looking at something else. And you have a deficit of people who have really this notion of, I want to be useful to my audience. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about influencers. We're talking about some of the challenges in media and these low quality voices and things like that. And you live in Sweden. And I'm wondering, is this something which is around the world in all languages and cultures? Or is this mostly something from America and or the English speaking social media world?
Oh, of course it's, I mean, it's present in Sweden as well. I mean, if you take Instagram, it's internationally. Everyone is watching what everyone is doing. I mean, nothing is unique anymore. I mean, humanity is different right now. Everybody just wants to expose what they're doing, eating, drinking, showcasing everything. I mean,
so here's the thing. I don't like to put a moral slant on it or say it's good or bad. I think it's too easy to do that. But I think that the consensus that we've come to by yourself and myself is that a lot of social media content is just frankly distasteful. It's the type of thing that doesn't really hold your attention. And you hear about Instagram and Facebook on the news all the time. And then you browse these platforms yourself and you're like, wait a minute, these are supposed to be like the biggest, most powerful, the richest, most advanced tech companies. But you spend a couple of minutes on their platforms and it's, you know, weird stuff or stuff you don't care about or misleading stuff or unfriendly stuff or stupid stuff or untruthful stuff or just silliness or kids stuff or just doesn't really teach you about what's going on or how to be successful or how to have better relationships with other human beings. It doesn't give you a lot of skills. It doesn't open up career doors for you. For the most part, it doesn't really give you so much. So what's the big deal? Why is everyone talking about Instagram and how it's amazing and how all the kids need to be using it? I'm so confused. And maybe a lot of people feel that way.
I mean, it's because it's for free. I mean, everything that needs work, it needs time. And I don't know if many people want to, take their time and produce great material for Instagram that can be stolen any minute because all images and text can be taken away and reposted and used and not tagged and so on. I mean, that's the thing when we were doing the images in the magazine, nothing was for profit, but of course we had advertisers that appreciated and wanted to advertise with us and understood the magazine. But when we were compared to influencers and things like that, that's when I think the industry lost it. I mean, it wasn't any point anymore to spend a full month producing images that was compared to an Instagram post, you know?
Now let's look at it from the other side. Let's sort of take the alternative position that would be contrary to our viewpoint. They would say, okay, Well, what you're saying is obvious because you two are in the content creation industry. You have lost out, and therefore you are, you know, maybe a little bit bitter about how the world hasn't gone in the direction of what you do, but something else. And that these guys are businesses, and they have their finger on the pulse of what does make the money, what doesn't make the money. And maybe the things you're talking about could make the money if they put more money into it. But, you know, these guys are desperate to get some type of level of normalcy. And what you're really advocating is luxury spending. And maybe that makes sense that luxury companies should be engaged in luxury spending, but practically it might not always work out that way. And that these brands are just going to do sort of what they feel like they need to do, given weird circumstances. And that, you know, maybe if what we do is so great, there's, you know, other avenues of doing it for more appreciative clients. Again, I'm just trying to think about the other side of it, because I hate to be so one-sided, because, you know, I think the thing that would make us sound old is being like, you know what's better? The past. You know what sucks? The future. Like, I don't ever want to come across that way.
No, I'm not bitter at all. I mean, I still appreciate watch photography and the brands that actually understand it. I'm not saying like everything is bad and they don't understand anything anymore. I'm just saying that how everything was divided into different worlds. I mean, I'm just like an artist. I mean, if I produce my music and the one that appreciates me will listen to me, so... I mean, it was the same thing with the magazine. I mean, we didn't have every brand on board, but the best ones were there. And it was the ones that actually understood us and appreciated us. And that's what was, and that matters end of the day. So
let's talk a little bit about the economics of luxury, because yeah. As I'm talking about this, I'm thinking about something very interesting. We're looking throughout history of amazing pieces of art, timepieces. Yeah. Paintings, all, you know, buildings, and most of these things throughout history were produced at the whim of a very wealthy person as a luxury item, a luxury building, a luxury timepiece, a luxury car. And we celebrate these things that were made as luxuries by people that could afford them. So you and I, in sort of a direct or indirect way, thrive when we can have a patron, right? We're creators, like artists get to do those wonderful art when there's that rich person to pay for it. Like society's not going to pay for it. Like Kickstarter wasn't going to do like, you know, a Sistine Chapel ceiling, right? That you just had to have someone crazy rich with a vision and said, you know what? That's going to be awesome. Hire the painters. It's going to be amazing. I just trust me. It's going to be cool. And so when people have a large amount of money to spend and want to prove themselves to others, and there's this competitive growth, they're spending. Be like, you know what's going to make our watches awesome? If we hire this beautiful team to make these amazing watches, and it's going to look gorgeous, and our watches, even though they're priced less than the other guy, they're going to look like they're worth more. That's definitely worth, you know, this expensive month-long shoot. And maybe what we're seeing is that the luxury industry, you know, despite the fact that it's for the luxury industry, doesn't really have a lot of luxury margins right now or luxury profits. And this is, you know, so the success that you were talking about over the 20-year period, the industry was growing. And now we know the industry is shrinking. Maybe what's going on right now is just completely what we should expect. And there's no reason to, you know, complain about it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you mean. It will be interesting to see how the watch industry will be. And maybe they won't launch 20 new models. Maybe they launch 10 models, which I think is fine for a drop. I mean, it's good to understand the models and, be more focused. Before it was like... it was a big spread. Don't you remember sometimes like some presentation could be like 2 hours long? I think it's going to be interesting to see for sure.
What was interesting about it was we had this snapshot as to how weird and wild the world luxury industry was, because we constantly saw products or even entire brands. We're like, I don't understand how anybody could buy any of this stuff, but it's doing well somewhere, which I loved it because it was sort of this weird reminder that the world really is kind of big and there's no way that I could understand it all.
Yeah, absolutely. That's for sure.
And then things kind of stopped. And I have been telling people this since I started, and that is that the watch industry will have to reduce in size before it gets back to some type of stable baseline. I do think that there is a very healthy future for the watch industry, but it's in a different world with different rules. And I think the scary thing is that as we're seeing the industry shrink, nobody wants themselves to sort of be shrunk out of it, right? Because we know that a lot of things have, and a lot of things have already had to go, and no one knows quite how small it's going to get, which brands are going to fare best. There's just so many unknowns right now, and which that's ironic because that's what the watch industries hate the most is the unknown. Like they can't handle it.
I know. Do you know, I mean, let me just mention Baselworld. I think I'm like the only person that actually loved going to Baselworld. I love
it's got
like,
a bad reputation, right? Isn't that sad?
I know, it's so sad. But I mean, I must be the only person on the internet loving Baselworld. You know, I still have the catalog like from 2008 when it was, I think like 1,000 exhibitors or something. I mean, the catalog
It used to be really
like 2,000 pages, you know?
Yeah.
It was huge, like 5-6 different halls. It was huge. I mean, I loved it. You know, just going from booth to booth.
So wait, did you not experience the things that other people didn't like, or were you just like, just ignore them and they don't faze you?
Yeah, but it depends. I mean, I can understand from small brands perspective or big brands as well. I mean, the cost, of course, like it's Switzerland, you had to pay the amount of having an you know, a booth at Baselworld, it's expensive. I mean, I understand that. Like, okay, you couldn't find somewhere to, there was not enough hotel for all the visitors.
It made no sense. Okay. It made no sense.
But as a trade show, I loved it. But everything around it.
It had character. And I agree. I preferred it than SIHH. SIHH was not a bad experience.
Yeah.
But Baselworld was more fun. But it was fun because you had a bunch of people who all had the same challenges. It was kind of like being at boot camp or summer camp. Yeah. Everyone was equally uncomfortable and you had to laugh about it.
Exactly. But I mean,
shared suffering is the number one way to make friends. Think about it. It really is.
Shared suffering.
That's why so many people make friends where? In class or at work?
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, okay, you couldn't buy any food anywhere. So, and it was like the toilets were far away and like no hotels. Okay.
I like that there was a law in Switzerland that says if you want to use the bathroom, you have to either go up or down a flight of stairs.
I know.
There's no. It is against the law to have a restroom on the same level. Yeah, absolutely against the law.
And I did it in high heels all the year.
Yeah, you did. And you did something I could never do, which was dress to impress these people. Look, I'm carrying around gear. I'm traveling. I'm American. I'm from California. I'm going to wear something that I'm not going to be uncomfortable in. And to this day, people will not stop hating me for being casual at work.
That's for sure. But I mean, as a watch lover I am, I loved it because there were so many brands. I didn't have to travel all over the world to visit them. They were just there. The entire families, everyone was there. So I loved it.
You didn't even know what day it was. It was like you were on a cruise, but you never left anywhere.
Yeah, is it dark outside? Who knows? Is it, you know, what time is it? Yeah. What day is it? You had no idea. I love them.
Have you visited the gift store for watch lovers? It's called the Blog to Watch Store, and we carry art, apparel, and accessories for today's timepiece enthusiasts. Buy your wristwatches elsewhere and celebrate the watch collecting hobby with high-quality original products at the Blog to Watch Store. Right now, the Blog to Watch Store features a line of t-shirts inspired by iconic timepieces and designed by the collecting experts at the Blog to Watch. Made from 100% premium cotton, our soft fitted t-shirts are stylish, fun, and models like our iconic diver dial even have a glow-in-the-dark face. The Blog to Watch Store carries bespoke yet affordable products, which the Blog to Watch editorial team wanted for themselves as the first customers. Visit the website to see what is available right now, and we ship internationally with new products coming all the time. Check it out by logging on to store.ablogtowatch.com. That's store.ablogtowatch.com.
Watches and Wonders is coming up in late March of 2022. I will be there. It'll be in Geneva. It's going to be, it's going to be the real return to the big trade show that everyone goes to. Rolex will be there. Patek Philippe will be there. All of Richemont Group, maybe Swatch. LVMH is definitely going to do some of the area. You know it. It's going to be, the closest return. It's going to be bigger than SIHH, not quite Baselworld, in Geneva, which isn't that much better than Basel. Let's be honest. Really not that much better. You're going to go, I presume, but what are you hoping for, and what are you hoping doesn't happen? Like, what are you afraid of?
No, I'm not afraid of anything. I mean, I'm just happy to be back. Seriously, every time I go to Geneva and I visit the brands, I just feel alive again, just, meeting them.
It's the espresso they keep giving you every 15 minutes on the dot.
In a plastic.
Sugar, espresso, sugar, espresso, sugar, espresso. That's like all it is her. Like, that's the thing that I remember the first time.
No, it's always in a small white plastic cup.
Oh, the little cup. Yeah, but a lot of these trips are like, hurry up to your next meal. That's what it seemed a lot. Hurry up to your next meal. You're going to eat again.
And this white bread sandwich that just tastes air. And
Okay, but you know what? There is some really good food in Switzerland. Switzerland is not a place that you can complain about the food too much.
No, that's true.
I feel like if SIHH or any of these shows ever happened in America, I used to say it should happen in Orlando. Yeah. That would be the number one thing, is I can just see all the Europeans just going crazy about the food. They're like, what is this? Like, this is just laughing about it or getting pissed off about it because it's not high quality enough.
Okay, but if the food at the SIHH is one of the best food, I mean, then for a trade show, that's amazing. And order foie gras.
You're right. Rosette is completely right. There's the sit-down lunch, multiple courses, really great food, no doubt. But here's the thing. It's a trade show and you're running around to meetings and you're late. You had no option other than to sit down to have a proper meal. There was no to-go sandwiches. There's no I need something for this. There was opportunities to have a sandwich in the meeting, 100%. Yet that was against the law.
Yeah, but I could never eat during a presentation. You can't do that.
But what I'm saying is you need to eat, but if you couldn't eat during lunchtime, they didn't even serve the whole day. They only served food for a 2 hour period in the middle of the day. It was so you have to eat at lunch. It's so the American idea of you make your own schedule, you can work 8 hours straight. Don't worry, food will be served at the beginning, at the end. You missed lunch? Yeah, screw you, pal.
That's why it was so good with Plaza being present in the Middle East and Scandinavia. So I could just jump in from to the Middle Eastern presentations or Scandinavian or international. So that's how you work it.
So you're looking forward to seeing everyone again. Are there particular brands, watches, price levels, designs, people? You have to have something to look forward to. I mean, we're still technically in the pandemic. We need hope.
Of course. Some of the brands became good friends. I mean, I used to... if you think about it, if we meet them at least two times a year for trade shows and then traveling to Geneva back and forth for, photo shoots and landouts and so on, I mean, you meet them more than some of your cousins or friends. So it will be a welcomed reunion for sure.
Now, let's talk about some of the sort of darker side of things. There's a lot of problems in these trade shows and things that probably shouldn't come back. What are some of the ways you hope they evolve, and what are some of the things that you hope remains in the past?
Oh, interesting question.
Because you're a very analytical person and you're honest.
Yeah, I am.
You're not going to share all your thoughts, but that's why we're friends, is we both find the best by observing the worst.
I know, but maybe being more, the brands should be more present, when you could actually book an appointment and go through the collection and, be able to talk with the CEO, the designer, the PR leader. I mean, that was being present.
I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think they're going to be more of it. I agree with you. They totally should. But them being more organized, having more staff, more samples, all the things that like
more
money costs.
For sure. I mean, that's when you actually understood the brand and, you know, had a close relationship with the collection. And I think that's that was like an educational time when you could actually sit for 1 hour and talk with the people from the brand and see the entire collection. Now,
I mean, you're right. A lot of the annoyances that you and I experienced are definitely going to come back and probably be worse because it's an untested thing. You know, they always understaff it. They're always like, we'll do 1 year and then we'll see what we really need for year two. You know, like with Wi-Fi. Let's just try a whole year without Wi-Fi, huh?
Yeah, I like no Wi-Fi or big presentations of 30 journalists inside so nobody could actually ask a question. So, and everybody
And one watch to go around. Yeah, hey, everyone, here's 6 minutes for 35 people to take pictures of watch.
Yeah, exactly.
Have fun. That's all you need, right?
Yeah, and we had to like wait for our turn to just see the watch. And sometimes we didn't have the time because we had to go to another meeting or presentation. And we didn't have the chance to actually touch it, feel it, take a picture, or, you know, just talk with the designer. So, yeah, that's something that could be improved for sure.
Okay, well, we'll see how it goes. Let's sort of shift gears here for a second and go back to the concept of watch photography, which is something we wanted to talk about. And we talked a little earlier about these productions, and you mentioned an interesting detail that like 25 people or a lot of people are involved in, you know, each of these productions. Why so many people? And tell the audience a little bit about what it takes to make like an amazing, highly produced watch, you know, picture.
I mean, first of all, our team at Plaza Watch was unique. I mean, everyone was passionate about watches and art and photography. That's, I mean, rule number one, have a great team. Number two,
But where did this team come from? Like, did you have to make it? This is the type of person that's in Sweden? Like, you mentioned the team was important, but how did such a team come together to begin with?
I mean, they were hired for, they weren't hired for just Plaza Watch particularly. One was an art director for several magazines. I mean, Plaza Publishing Group had 12 magazines, interior decoration, fashion, and so on. But I think we all connected somehow during like a lunch break or something that we had design, photography and watches as a common interest, and we just became a team. We're like, okay, let's do this for Plaza Watch, and we were like a team of seven people.
Did that require the brands to spend more or just spend differently? Because I presume that, you know, it costs more.
No. Everyone was hired full time. Just that Plaza Watch was only published three times a year. So when it was time to produce the magazine, everyone was focusing on Plaza Watch.
So you had the luxury of time. You didn't have to write. I was writing on average 3 to 5 articles a day for about a year, probably longer, maybe 4 years. I was writing between 3 to 5 articles a day.
Yeah, but I mean, exactly. So that's the difference. So saying that Plaza Watch was a magazine, that's a bit wrong. It's more as a coffee table book, I would say, because we had
It's the type of magazine that you don't want to throw away. Let's put it that
exactly.
way.
Exactly. And nobody did. Everybody, I always had emails from people like, oh, I missed number 23. Could I please buy it? Or could you please send it to me? So I know that people were collecting them. So
you couldn't find them in America. It was really hard to. I never saw one in a newsstand here. That's the reason I was sort of late on board, because it wasn't in my market. And it wasn't until like I started going to Baselworld and seeing the magazine, like, and it was this nice, cool looking logo. And like you said, it had all that amazing photography. I was like, what's going on here? I want to know these people. Cause it was it took it seriously, because so many of the other magazines, here's the thing. They didn't take their own pictures. You not only took great pictures, you took pictures at all. Other magazines took zero pictures. They took marketing shots that brands made, sometimes are just computer images or just boring catalog shots.
We never did that. That was our room. We produced everything ourselves.
But that made you different. Now, Blog to Watch was very much like that, because I made sure that as often as possible, it was my own photography, which is, again, different because it was mostly images brands would release. And so that's what I noticed first, because I knew how lazy most of the magazines were. The fact that Plaza Watch didn't just go ahead and republish those images that were given to them via email, just that alone set itself apart. And there's like, even back then when there was a lot more watch magazines, I think there was probably less than 20 in the world. And I think like 90% of them were in Japan that took their own images of watches.
I mean, that's true what you're saying. And I mean, if we say like it was the team, of course, number one, passion. Then number two, we had the time to produce quality. I mean, publishing the magazine three times a year gave us the time to actually go to Switzerland, if it was Rolex or Patek Philippe, to visit the manufacturer, meet the people, see the collection, take a picture of the collection, organize a photo shoot in Switzerland with a photographer that is expert in watch photography, and having the watches sent to the studio to produce them, and have a brainstorming session with the brand and with the photographer and our team. So you can imagine the work behind 8 pages of watch photography. That's like 1 or 2 months preparations. So.
I'm just jealous. That's literally all I'm thinking, because I never had that luxury of time. I never had the team. Especially when I was starting out, I never had the luxury to have budgets like that. I had to do everything by myself quickly and competently with no oversight. And I think what happened was that, you know, people that came from sort of the publishing world, that was a lot more organized and high, and you know, in a lot of ways higher quality when it comes to the media assets, of course, was they were sort of like angry that I sort of like, you know, me and people like me took away the vibe. But there was never a lot of respect for how much we did with as little as we did, because you guys literally, I mean, I would have loved to be in your position, but you were living a life. I was like, I was working hard. I was like hustling really hard. I was grinding myself to the bone. And I would have loved to be living what sounds like a relatively comfortable life, being able to produce beautiful content and develop this close relationship with brands. Like, I don't think I got a lot of credit for the fact that that just wasn't even possible.
Yeah, but I mean, we worked 24/7. We worked in a different way, because when you work for something you love, it's not work. So even if you say you're hustling, we were hustling, but we were hustling for ourselves, because we just loved when the magazine came from the printers. I mean, it was, you know, seeing a new baby every day and time. You know,
it's great, but I'm just saying, like, it's a completely different way of getting the work product, and people sort of put us in the same category as like watch media, which we are. Yeah. But the actual day to day of what we do, what we did, whatever, is very vastly different. And there needs to be both in the market. There needs to be both in the market.
I know, but when you say like, I wish we had the budgets. I mean, of course we had a budget, but we were sometimes working late until like one in the night, or you know, at 12 hours every day, and you know, not being.
Do I need to remind you what time I go to sleep?
Yeah, I know you worked late, but yeah, just that. And the difference is when people are working from their heart, that's different. They just enjoy what they're doing, and that's not work anymore. So,
You know what's sad? There's very few people in the watch industry, and maybe the luxury industry, that get by without working very, very hard. Everyone that even like that just is semi-successful in the luxury watch space is a very, very hard worker. Not always the smartest people, but all the successful ones do work very hard. Would you agree?
Of course. You can see true. True, directly. I mean, I can see if a watch photography is made well or not. I mean, you can't be like semi-successful and not working hard. I mean, you have to work hard.
Well, I mention it because that's the game. The game that everyone plays is, I'm not working very hard. I'm hanging out a lot. My life is a vacation. Super successful. Everybody wants my stuff. And all I do is hang out and spend time on Instagram all day. Like, they go so far out of their way to demonstrate to you that they're living this leisure lifestyle.
Yeah. So, and how long term is that? You can do that for a couple of years.
All I'm saying is that the thing which is perceived as cool isn't, wow, so-and-so works so hard. It's, wow, so-and-so is really lucky. They don't have to do that much.
Yeah, but there will always be people like that. It's just like back in school when you ask someone if they made their homework. They're like, yeah, no, I was out playing with my friends. I didn't do my homework. And then they got an A. They're like, everybody pretend.
I told you exactly that. Haven't you heard me say that this industry is like high school?
Yeah, it is. But it's like the cool kids and the nerds. I would always say, I'm a nerd. I'm a beautiful nerd.
I've said, and I stand by it, that Rolex as a company essentially employs like teenage girl tactics, like being, you know, too cool for school. Yeah. And if you want them, they don't want you. And they're supposed to look aloof and unavailable. and that's how they want to be treated. Yeah. You know, so I think
they're super cool, honestly.
So you want to be Rolex's friend?
I am Rolex's friend.
But, yeah, see?
Yeah, but my favorites are Patek Philippe. They are the coolest.
So do you like their women's watches? Is that what you're saying?
I love both the women and the men's watches. But honestly, I think the company and the people at Patek Philippe are one of the best in the industry.
Super respectable brand, no yeah. doubt. But the 24, really?
Yeah, but okay.
The 24 is a relatively modern or newly released women's collection from Patek Philippe that isn't that elegant? I wouldn't know what to call it. It's not very feminine.
I mean, I was there for the launch in Milan for the 24. I was invited among.
Okay. What was your initial reaction? What was your initial reaction to the 24?
I just thought it was like something new and refreshing for the women because they hadn't done anything for the women. I mean, and the 24 for a long time. But I like the classic one for sure. But maybe I am a classic as a person.
Very political, Rosette. Very political. Good job. Very good job.
Okay, but my point here with talking about Philippe is that I only wear brands that I know the people behind and respect, and they are one of them in the industry for sure.
I even
bought my first Patek Philippe when I was 30 for my 30th birthday. So, and I'm proud of it. And it's not like what they are famous for now on social media. Oh, we should have the Nautilus or the Aquanaut.
Oh,
and
every time I even hear Nautilus, my eyes automatically roll. I don't know why. I can't help it.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, so. I'm just saying they're great people. So
well, I was saying it's really cool when you have a watch and you know the people of the company because it really sort of most consumers wouldn't know anyone at the company and they might love it, but like we're able to understand who's behind it and who designed it. Sometimes it does add a lot to the experience.
Exactly, and it does. I mean, if the people in the company are rude, I can't even wear the brand. So. It has to come from the inside.
Now, let's talk about the photography again. And I want to just sort of explore how a lot of this is made. One of the things that I've experienced is a lot of, we'll call them standard photographers, thinking they can take pictures of watches and then learning that they can't very quickly. What's your experience with people who think they can take pictures of watches and really, really can't?
I mean... it's like saying, what is art nowadays? I mean, you can just draw a line on a paper and call it art. It depends. It has to speak to you, I guess. But I know also...
Okay, I mean, like, you know, color correcting and it not being blurry and there being enough light. I'm talking about, like, fundamentals.
Yeah, of course. But, I mean, a picture can never lie if it's good. It just speaks to you. And it's... it has, a deepness to it. So
you say this while you laugh at bad watch photography. I know it.
I can see if the watch is photoshopped. I can see if the light is fake. I mean, you can see all of that. But when you see a very good watch photography, it's like you just want to rip the page out and save it. I always do that when I buy a magazine. If I see something good, it can be in an advertising campaign or just a picture someone took, it's different. Yeah, you just want to save the picture. And that's what...
I agree. And, you know, I actually want to own someday the entire collection of Plaza Watch magazines. I don't have any because, again, none of them ever came up here. But, like, they are that nice. And yeah. I think that if you sold posters of some of those things, I don't know who owns the rights to that stuff right now. But, like, I think there's money in that.
Of course. Yeah.
The photographers? Yes, really?
Yeah.
They are. Interesting.
Yes.
Interesting. Good for them. I mean, that's not always the case. Well, maybe they'll decide to do that. Here's a question, and I don't know the answer to it. So a blog to watch right now has hundreds of thousands of images that is compiled over the years from myself and the various photographic team that might have some type of use or value in some context as a collection. And I always wondered, because again, it's there's going to be all kinds of people are going to have pictures, but these are pictures, high quality pictures of things that are very rare, hard to get access to. There's probably not going to be that much of them. I mean, a lot of these watchmakers that made this stuff, you know, were the ones that grew up and sort of learned watchmaking when it was still a thing. Like, those people are all going to be long, long dead, you know, 40 years from now.
Yeah, I know. But I mean,
and I'm just, you know what I mean? I'm wondering, like, outside of historic perspectives or even commercial perspectives, like, you know, who will want to see all this stuff?
You know, when I would use it as a library, you know, when you used to want the information, you went to a library and you Google in their computer about searching for information. I think.
Or the library in the museum.
No, normal libraries. I mean, in Sweden, like before Google and everything, I went to the library and they had like this computer and you would search for information. That's how I think like a blog to watch will be, a library of information about watches back in the days. If I would, if I want a review of a watch, I would search for the watch and write a blog to watch and would receive the review from 2008 or something. So.
I guess then maybe that's it. It's just, you know, maintain the website, make sure it just lasts and lasts and lasts. Because, I mean, again, we take this for granted, but like today, we published this article, this watch from a company called Alchemists. And it's this guy that studied under Philippe Dufour and he worked at Beauvais making stuff. And this is his own brand. And this watch costs like $210,000 and like 20 will ever be made. And it's just like crazy nice. And I'm sitting there and I'm handling it and I'm, photographing it. And I'm realizing like very few people will ever see any of these watches. Like, this is such a weird, rare little thing that this, like, master craftsman, like, put his heart and soul into. Like, this is going to matter someday to somebody, like, a lot.
Yeah, I know. But a watch like that isn't for everybody either. I mean, the one that will buy that watch will be interested and understand it. And I think the watchmaker...
But it as art, not the watches, but the photography of it, right? These are beautiful items.
Yeah.
Your work proved that. So the question is, absent these things existing in the world, will images of them be... Think of like landscapes. People love pictures of beautiful natural landscapes in their homes and offices of places that don't represent where they live.
No.
It's sometimes those places are like basically fantasies. Yeah. People love pictures of beautiful things that they can't see in their lives on their walls. I've always thought that like a watch... is something like that. It's mechanical, but it's beautiful. It's got these colors. It just seems like it could put you in the right mood. Like there's this whole art market for watch photography that just seems to be sitting there.
I know, but you're comparing different things. I mean, a watch photography, I know that most people, when they collect it or have it on the wall, it's a watch that they dream about having one day or a watch that they actually own. So I think that's the difference between the landscape or a home.
So you don't agree that they look nice? So you're seeing the object, the desirability object.
I can do it because I love visuals. I love watches, so I love all kind of watch photographies and brands. But it's because I am into watches in a different way. But when you're talking about the overall people that will not see that particular watch or the photography of it, I mean. It's just that it's too niche for the mainstream market.
Maybe. It could be. But I think if you took pictures of the movement of this Alchemist watch, for example, and you showed it to random people on the street, and it was a nice picture, and be like, do you think this is nice looking? I think most people would be like, that's really pretty.
Yeah, absolutely. But again, it's all about education and brand awareness sometimes and explaining. If you would stand there on the street showing the images and afterwards actually explaining the watch and the watchmaker, I think people would love the picture and pictures even more.
You could be right. You could be right. I mean, again, I say this as someone who has been training myself, you know, over the course of a long time on what is a beautiful watch. I've seen so many of them. Like, I might just take for granted that beauty can be seen in them. I don't know.
Yeah, but it's, you know, when people ask me, like, what's your thing about watches? Why are you so interested in it? It's like, when I've seen the inside so many times, when I've seen the assembling of a watch and visiting the manufacturers, which I'm so happy and, you know, thankful, I have a deeper knowledge than other people just seeing a image of a watch, and that's different.
Like knowing things that other people don't know about?
Exactly. And then you get an understanding of how complicated it is. Some people are like, oh, how can it be that expensive? Yeah, because it's a team of maybe 80 people producing a watch for 2 to 3 years. I mean, and it's a produced of 200 parts. That's when you understand what you're paying for. And then that's also when you can appreciate the image of a watch. So when I'm
and
saying,
that's the value... Yeah. Or one of the sort of forms of exclusivity value in this space where only you and a select other group of people that have this knowledge can appreciate it. And that's what connects you. So you all know the story. Everyone else out there doesn't get it. And, you know, just going back to Patek Philippe, maybe it's a little bit different today, but that used to be the value proposition. Like, to everyone else, it just looks like a watch, right? Yeah. It's kind of this conservative, you know, what was a watch, you know?
Yeah.
But to people that know... Oh, then you really can see that, get into it and appreciate it for what it is. And that, that of course, has been one of the amazing things about this hobby for many people. So we're about out of time. We'll definitely have to talk more. I think our next show should definitely be after we go to Watches and Wonders in Geneva.
Definitely.
And then we talk about whatever we what happened, what we experienced, and all the cool stuff we saw.
Exactly. And we get to talk about your big 40 coming up next summer. And if you're gonna buy a watch, and which watch and what?
Oh yeah, you want to talk about that? We're talking because I'm turning 40, and Rosette has pointed out I should probably celebrate with a watch. You know what the funny thing is?
What?
I didn't even consider that until you mentioned it. Like, even someone on our team has been going on about their 40th watch, and until you mentioned it, I never thought to myself Ariel should get a 40th watch.
You should. I mean, it's not. I did it for my 30. It was like when I turn 40, I will. I mean, when is the best feeling when you buy a watch? It's celebrating a milestone.
What's a good amount to spend? Like your 40th. Like what should somebody who likes watches spend?
Oh, stop, Ari. We can't talk about money here. It's like
you're right. That's not polite.
No, and that's polite, but it has nothing to do actually with how expensive it is, or I think it's more what watch represents
it's
your
like,
feeling.
It's like
on
you're the
40.
Ambassador of Switzerland. You're so good.
Yeah,
you're so every time you you like breach Swiss etiquette, you're right there with like the perfect thing to say. This is, ladies and gentlemen, this is why Rosette Hirsch is so good at her job. Just right, quick on her toes, immediately correcting me. Don't talk about, and it's true. You're not supposed to talk about money in the luxury industry. As ironic as that is the absolute rule. And no one says it to you. At least no one ever said it to me. I just had to learn it the weird way.
Yeah, but every watch means differently. I mean, I could never sell my watches. And I have a variety of watches. And some of them are expensive and some of them are less expensive. But I can, I can tell you about my less expensive watch, but it means a lot to me. I went to Venice this summer, and it was the best Venice experience I've ever had. There were no tourists. The streets were almost empty, and you could just walk around there. And I passed by a Swatch boutique, and I went in, and I've never actually bought a Swatch. And they had this Venice edition.
Oh, cool.
And I bought it, and it was lovely. I just loved it. And, you know, it had the stamp of the day when I bought it. And it had this Venice, what do you call it?
like a logo, insignia, emblem. I haven't actually, I flew over Venice, but I haven't been there yet.
Yeah, but I mean, it was unique and you could only buy it in Venice, which I thought was a cool thing to do. But so
that is a cool thing to do.
Yeah, so I love it and it's a nice memory. And it's a
swatch. You think I should get a swatch for my 40th birthday? Is that what you're saying?
Definitely not.
Okay.
You gotta work it more. No, but and still, you know what I love about swatch? It's Swiss made and it's actually a good watch. I mean, I like it.
You know, I'll probably just get the Rolex. I'll probably just like go to Rolex and be like, come on, guys, it's my 40th.
Exactly.
They're not gonna say no.
And they're not gonna say yes either. Like
begging for permission to buy a watch.
Yeah, exactly.
Please sell me a watch. Could you be so kind as to give me the opportunity to give you a lot of money?
Yeah.
Could you do that? Would you allow me to give you tons of cash for your small metal object, please?
Oh, I have one favorite Rolex I would love to have, but I can't mention it here because it will be even harder to get it. So.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. But you know what? The one I want, no one would guess what it is. They just wouldn't guess what it is.
Mine is a vintage, I can tell everyone. So it's not a new one.
Oh, it's a vintage one.
Yes, and I'm not going to say it here because or else everyone...
Aren't you afraid of breaking vintage watches? That's the number one thing I worry about. They're so delicate half the time. They look great, and then you're like, wait a minute, this is really fragile.
Yeah, but I mean, I love looking at my watch collection one and then. Like, hello, history. Yeah.
And then, I just feel like, you know, there's like the, I always thought this would be funny for like a sponsor, an April Fool's Day thing where, you know, those have those like couches that have the plastic protection on it.
Yeah.
It's like the same thing with a watch. Like you wear it, but there's like a plastic, you know, sleeve that goes over it or something that to protect it.
I had it on one of my watches like underneath and it felt like always so good. It's like, oh, wow, it's still new somehow.
I know, but the whole thing is covered in like a plastic bag. Yeah. So it's like, that was a joke.
Yeah.
I'll come up with more ideas for comedy. All right, everyone, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Superlative Podcast. My guest once again has been Miss Rosette Hirsch, and you can listen to more later. Thank you so much, Rosette.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Superlative Podcast. Support the show by subscribing and rating it on your preferred podcast platform. For questions, comments, and ideas, please email the show at superlative@ablog2watch.com. For the latest in watch news, reviews, and culture, visit ablog2watch.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.